Welcome to Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham, Rod Mullins. It is a Monday. We're going to talk some NASCAR and coming out of Texas on Sunday. Rod, I think they finally finished that race. Man, it took forever just to get it finished. They ran 276 laps of a scheduled 267 because of all the restarts there at the end. And Chase Elliott, for the first time in a long time, I guess, right. You know, if you're going to have to wait 18 months to win a race, you might as well go through 9 or 10 overtime laps. But Elliott gets the win. A lot going on there as the race finishes up. Take us into the all the doings there in Texas.
Well, I have to say this. Suspending a 42-race winless streak. It couldn't have come at a better place and a better time for Chase Elliott, because Chase Elliott needed this more than anything else. I was saying last year, he needed to win. He needed something to show that he was still effective out of it. And then sure enough, he hangs around the front, sort of like what he did at Martinsville too. He was kind of hanging around there close to the front. And, there when the end all came about and so forth, he's there. We just had to go into overtime just to have the thing decided. But I tell you, it was a interesting race right down there to the final laps. Of course, we saw Denny Hamlin spin out, lose, ended up finishing his day behind the wall. He did not have a good day in general. Then you had Ross Chastain, who got collected by William Byron, which opens up another can of worms there. Brad Keselowski at the end of the race said, I know Jamie Little from Fox Sports came up to him and said, you know, you're credited with third. He said, well, I think I'm really ought to be credited with second out of this. He said, you know, I think if they go back and they check this, they're going to find out that I finished second. And sure enough, NASCAR went back, revised it, and they found out that, yes, he did finish second and runner-up finish after the official review. And then Byron was credited with a third place finish out of it. Tyler Reddick and Daniel Suarez completed the top five. Daniel Suarez was not having a good day yesterday either, but he managed to get back up toward the front and there toward the end of it and kind of keep himself into contention right there for Trackhouse Racing. I think the other thing that really stood out was the 1-2 punch in the eighth and ninth position of Austin Dillon and Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch early on had troubles with this car, but they still managed to finish top 10. And Austin Dillon, I think this is like his first top 10 probably of the season since switching crew chiefs. So it was a good day, at least for Richard Childress Racing, at least being able to rebound back. But I guess if anybody's going to give any kind of credit out of this, Carson Hocevar, 10th place finish, his first Texas race, if you want to call it that, in a cup car. He finishes 10th. Just a great performance for him altogether. But, you know, what can you say about Chase Elliott winning this race? He was patient down to the very end, and I know that there were people saying, well, you know, he kind of he did not win the race. And you know, you've got your anti-Hendrick people out. They've started coming out of the woodwork, so to speak. And when Hendrick starts winning races, everybody says there's a conspiracy theory involved. And this one, there wasn't a conspiracy theory involved with it. And you didn't have Jeff Gordon after the end of the race saying you couldn't have scripted it any better than this. It was just a race that it was, you know, Chase Elliott's day. It was his time had come to win a race.
He had the lead on the first restart, which was still in regulation, right. Two laps left in regulation. And him and Hamlin, you talked about Denny Hamlin. They were going, and Hamlin got loose before the white flag. And Hamlin, you know, said just got loose, spun out. That was it. Nothing more to it. He led a little bit of this race. Mm-hmm. But so in a sense, I mean, Elliott, if without the spin out, I mean, maybe he goes out to the win in regulation. So conspiracy mm-hmm. theories aside, whatever they may be, it just led to a more exciting finish.
I think it did too. And, you know, let's go ahead and clarify some things too. I know that there's some people probably thinking, well, you know, Denny Hamlin, he did wreck, you know, he did say he got loose, but there was a reason he got loose. And that was the fact that he was trying to get up behind Chase Elliott there to give him the little bit of the bump and hopefully a bump and run sort of move. But when Chase Elliott goes down and takes the air off, especially on that right side and that spoiler, that kind of throws air back. And when that happened, the next thing, it just seems to be. There's no downforce. There's no front downforce for that car. And that's exactly what you said happened. I mean, it got loose. The car got loose. Denny Hamlin didn't have any other excuse out of the whole thing. But now, if you go back and you look at the William Byron Ross Chastain incident, I'm going to kind of lean in this direction. If Chastain had had a fast enough car, he could have contended and gave Elliott a run for his money right there at the very end. So something either happened, or at least it looks that way to me. Something happened with Ross Chastain's car that he slowed up because Byron was full blast going into him. And then he turned him around, and then, you know, that was the end of it. And I think he ended up finishing 32nd or 33rd out of the lineup from yesterday at the finish of the race. But I really can't blame William Byron out of this. There's a lot of people that are blaming him, saying that he'd had no right going up and, bumping Chastain. But, you know, still, this is one of those things that happen during racing. You don't have brake lights. You can't see brake lights. You can't determine when they're not out of the throttle until you're already on them. So it was just one of those racing incidents was what it was yesterday. And, I can't say enough about this whole thing with Kyle Larson and the tire coming off on the car. That was one thing that I had not seen, and he was able to drive around most of the track on three wheels, managed to get his laps back, and then still ends up getting spun out there toward the end of the race. But, Kyle Larson had a great race there. He had a great race going, and then something happened where they said that the hub did not lock, or something did not lock down like it was supposed to and fully engage. And when that happened, the tire just goes. And after a little bit, he says, "I feel something. I think I've got a right rear going down." And by that time, we see it on national television. The tire goes one way, his car goes another. And, you know, he gets penalized for it and gets dropped behind two laps because of that tire and that tire being loose.
You talked about Brad Keselowski a little earlier. I saw an interesting quote from Brad Keselowski after the race. Now, he finished second. Mm-hmm. The quote's going to make it sound like he finished like 37th in this race.
Yep.
The quote is, "The driver in me is frustrated because I feel like these are races I am good enough to win, but don't have enough speed to do it. The owner in me is mad as hell because it's my fault for not making the cars faster." Now, he hasn't won since April 2021. He's obviously been very competitive the last three mm-hmm. years, but man, he's hard on himself there. What do you take out of that?
Yeah, I take it he's very hard on himself right now. And the thing that he is looking at is finishing the way he has been finishing so far in this year. And also last year, Chris Buescher has actually won more races than Brad Keselowski here in the last couple of years because of his now the affiliation with Roush Fenway Keselowski Racing. But, you know, that saying of what he said right there, he said, "The owner in me is frustrated because we don't have enough speed. The Fords are lacking in speed." Somewhere along the line, the Fords are lacking in speed, and you can tell that on some of the short tracks and some of the intermediate tracks. We're going to see what Ford has in them coming up this weekend at Talladega, because when they get to Talladega, it's going to be a whole different beast. And Ford has had a good, super speedway car. It's just a matter of how well Keselowski and company are going to get this car tuned, because Buescher pulled off a win, if I'm not mistaken, pulled off a win at Talladega or one of the super speedways here in the last year or two. And, you know, he came away with a big win, and, you know, we were kind of all just scratching our heads saying, you know, where did he get this speed at? Where have they got this speed? I think Ford is still looking for some kind of solution out of it. Ford's thinking something of a rule change. I don't know what's going to come in of a rule change or something of that nature. We're not sitting where we were 30 or 35 years ago when Ford complained loud enough and they would get a rule change to kind of even the field with them and Chevrolet as they had it back then. This is a standard car. Everybody has the standard car. Everybody has the standard parts. Everything is all alike. It's not Ford. It's not Chevy. All the engines are the same. They just have a different plate on them is what they have on them. But yeah, I share with this frustration about it because I'm kind of wondering too, you've got a car that has been week in and week out, been great. that way your Keselowski car, you know, the two car comes in there and, or goes in that, I should say the six car, really the six car comes in there racing and racing really hard. And then Buescher is racing. Buescher has been in the top 10, had some things happen to him, but you kind of wonder where's the speed, where should they be getting this speed at and why don't they have it?
Yeah. Cause I was going to note, Ford doesn't have a win this year. Ryan Blaney's the last Ford driver. He won the championship last year. He's the last driver to win a race, and it was October of last year in Martinsville. So, yeah, it's odd. I mean, as you point out, there's so many similarities in these cars. But, I mean, weird, strange thing there. Talladega, Blaney, of course, I just mentioned, won the last race there. That was last October. Kyle Busch won last April. What are you thinking about with Talladega? You know, those two guys might be guys you look at. Blaney's the last guy to win back-to-back races at Talladega back in 2019 and 2020. So maybe he's a guy to look at as a winner this weekend.
Yeah, I think so. You know, Blaney had some bad luck in this race. Got turned around, hit the wall, did not have a good finish at all in this race. And he'd been running fairly decent so far on the season for a past champion. He'd been running pretty good because he'd been staying in contention. But with this wreck, they need something, and it's definitely going to come to fruition, I think, this weekend. I wouldn't count him out because once they can get that horsepower, Penske gets that horsepower underneath that car with the ability to go around Talladega like they are capable of doing, Blaney could be in the winner's circle. And, you know, I really can't say that Joey Logano might be in the winner's circle too. That's two cars right there. I don't know if Austin Cindric has reached that point yet. I know he won a Daytona 500 as a rookie, but still he has not made that big strides like the Loganos and like the Blaneys have so far on the season. And you still can't rule out Chevrolet in this. Richard Childress will probably bring a full-pledged effort to Talladega with him because that's the track he likes to really show out on. And Kyle Busch winning the race last year, you know, that was a big shot in the arm for that racing program and stuff, especially after they got Kyle Busch over to RCR. You know, Toyota, I don't know where Toyota stands right now. We've seen some Toyota flexing muscle, so to speak, on some of the short tracks, and they've won some races. Christopher Bell has won. But, you know, we're still in a situation of where are we going to see what Toyota really has in plans for this coming weekend at Talladega? I mean, we could have an even field all the way across, but chances are, I think we're going to see Ford and Chevy and then Toyota bringing up the rear on the super speedway cars. But that could change as easily as Friday afternoon when they get out there and they start doing some practice. We'll just have to see what happens. These guys have been known to be able to push these cars and get more out of them. We'll just have to see what they are capable of doing on Friday.
I just thought I'd mention it. We're early in the season, but looking at the standings, you know, from a playoff perspective, which the playoffs are still, it's a good ways away, but it's fun to look at this. Joey Logano is on the wrong side of the cutoff at 17. In fact, he'd be tied right now with Kyle Busch in 16th. They both have 217 points.
Right.
Brad Keselowski at 216. A couple other names, Austin Cindric, Eric Jones coming to Michael McDowell, guys that we've seen contending in the last few years, right now on the wrong side. But a lot of time to make up ground there, I guess, for all those guys. And a lot of time, too, for the guys in the top 16 to fall down. So, but are you surprised with, I mean, Logano and Keselowski might be the two biggest names I see on the other side of the cut line right now.
Yeah, that surprises me that Logano's had bad races. Logano has had, what, four, five bad races kind of there in a row. It's just not been good for him. They're still kind of scratching their head over there at Penske, wondering what in the world can they do to possibly, you know, finish a race and at least try to win a race before it's over with. You know, he did finish, you know, fairly good yesterday in the race, but still that's, you know, that's a little comfort, I think. You know, this thing with Keselowski, it's personal. It's a personal thing. When you go and you put yourself out, and you know, this being in business and so forth, when you extend yourself out and you extend yourself out money wise and so forth, your people that have invested in you, or at least looking at you to invest in you as a legitimate race program, are looking at you to be able to pull off some miracles. And so far they've pulled off some miracles, but it hasn't been with the primary, the trifecta car ownership out of this whole thing. And that is with Keselowski, but eventually he's going to get the total ownership of the way that Roush Fenway is going to kind of work things out. But he's in a situation where his back is against the wall with this. And if he is able to pull off a win this week and pull something off at Talladega, that'd be great. But I don't think one race is going to do it. He's going to have to win at least two or three on down the line this season to even get himself back into playoff contention. And then at that time, he's going to have to be consistent from that point on through to the end of the season, because if he even slips up just once, like if they have something bad happen, his chances of winning or at least being in a championship are out the window.
I was just watching Rod going to the Xfinity series. I was just watching another replay of the photo finish, to say the least. Yep. There, Sam Mayer and Ryan mm-hmm. Sieg, right?
Yep.
And I still can't believe Sam Mayer made up that ground there. I mean, it was tight. They were bumping. Mayer was against the wall. It took looking at that replay a few times to see that he was just literally maybe an inch ahead, 0.002 seconds, second closest finish in series history. Mm-hmm. What did you think about what you saw there?
Oh, I just thought it was awesome. I think the Xfinity series, matter of fact, you bring that up. After we got finished with Martinsville race, Andrew kind of said to me, as we were going home, he said, I think, who the better draw was, probably more so than the Cup race, was the Xfinity race. And I said, why did you say that? He said, just more thrilling. He said, there were, a lot more beating and banging, a lot more things about going out there. And, you saw some tempers flare and some different things like that of people getting upset. But he said, it seemed like they wanted it more so then they did the Cup race. And even though the Hendrick deal and so forth was going on, I think for Sam Mayer winning this race, that was a big shot in the arm. They needed that big shot in the arm right there. And he's a good driver. Junior Motorsports has been needing a big shot in the arm all season, like some of the other teams. Joe Gibbs Racing's already gotten their shot in the arm, where they won that race with Almirola at Martinsville last weekend. But, still, some of these teams need some wins right now, and how else better to end a race with, some beating and banging coming around the turns and so forth, and especially at a mile and a half track there at Texas. And Mayer just proved he's just a whale of a driver. He is.
So the Talladega race is Sunday at 3:00. Of course, Rod will have coverage for us there. I got to do what we've done the last couple of weeks, Rod, finishing the show up, talking a little bit of college basketball. Because down your way, you're down in Southwest Virginia, but you're not far, certainly, from the tri-state area of Virginia. Oh gosh, there's probably four states if you want to count West Virginia, yeah. Kentucky, mm-hmm. and Tennessee, all there right together. But Kentucky basketball news. So last week when we were talking, it was still who's going to get that Kentucky job. Now we know it's Mark Pope. You know quite a few diehard Big Blue Nation members down in that part of the state. What has been their response? What are you hearing from the folks down there about Mark Pope getting the job?
They love it. They okay. absolutely love it, because this is somebody that they feel like embodies what Kentucky basketball is all about. And he only played there 2 years. I mean, he only played there the last 2 years of his career. But, when it was almost like an informal way of taking himself out of the running. But when Patino comes in and, endorses Pope and says, I think he's going to be a great choice. I think he's a great leader for Kentucky basketball. I think that saved Rick Pitino some bucks of going to a tattoo artist or a laser surgery person to have that big Louisville L taken off his shoulder blades, wherever that he got once he left Kentucky. And then he went to Louisville. He had a big L, etched back here on his shoulder. He probably saved some money out of that. But I think Pope is a breath of fresh air into this Kentucky program. And you also see where the Kentucky money is at and where it comes from. And, I think the big thing was, I think the quote was that I had one diehard Big Blue Nation person come to me today and said, did you catch the little comment that he made about Reed Shepard? And it's like, you know, got to be a good shepherd about all this stuff. Well, of course, they're trying every way in the world to kind of keep Shepherd there at Kentucky, which I think Kentucky's going to keep him. You know, it's just going to be a question of who are they going to surround Shepherd with there at Kentucky for next year. But, you know, there's a lot of strange things going on and stuff. And it's almost like an open your mouth, insert foot sort of thing. It's like a James Watt sort of thing, the award that they used to give for the foot in the mouth saying. Danny White got himself, I think, in some hot water. And he is already looking at the future of where he's going to go when Rick Barnes decides he's going to leave at Tennessee. And that kind of surprised me. I wasn't expecting that, especially out of him. I would think that Barnes probably has at least 3 or 4 more years, maybe in his tank, still ready to go for basketball. It's just a matter of how well the transfer portal is going to work. But White's already looking, and it's either, I think they're getting to the point of where it's like, you're going to have to either make all the way down here to the very end, you're going to have to get to the Final Four, or you're going to be looking for another job. I mean, look at Kelly Harper. I mean, even though she had not made it to a Sweet 16 or made it into the Elite Eight or anything like that, 5 years, I mean, some of these people would be quite happy with this whole thing. They would be quite happy with the 20-win season she's been able to post. But, you know, not Danny White. It was time for a change, and he went outside. And I first questioned all this stuff with Kim Caldwell. I was like, where'd she come from? Never heard of her before. One and done at Marshall and everything. And, oh man, she's got a good track record, what she has so far. And she has coached NCAA Division II ranks, Mountain West Conference, Glenville State. She's a winner everywhere she's went, and they have been very offensive minded. And I think that's something that Tennessee needed. But getting back to the Kentucky thing, I think Kentucky is willing to show people how far they are willing to go in a case like this. I know that Dan Hurley had been talked to. Dan Hurley kind of just laughed at him, and it was sort of like the thing of, why should I leave where I'm at right now? And why? Why should he leave and jump in from one frying pan and going into the fire, so to speak, in this case? Because when you're going to Kentucky, you better be ready to win. You better be ready to win, and you better be ready to deliver and not have delivery when it comes to your whiskey or anything else like one of the former coaches did, because he was, Kentucky would be enough to make you drink. That's all I can tell you about. And Billy Gillespie knew, and Billy Gillespie is still having to fight that, fight those demons and so forth. But Kentucky would drive me to that point. I may have never taken a drop in my life and stuff on a serious basis of taking something that strong, but Kentucky basketball is the kind of thing that would make you start to become a hardcore drinker. That's what it would do.
One last thing I'll throw. Your Cincinnati Reds completed a weekend sweep of the reeling, to say the least, Chicago White Sox. The Reds are 9-6, and I'm looking at some numbers here. One of my guys, Andrew Abbott, UVA alum, putting up some good numbers. He won on Friday night in that series, 7 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, 3 strikeouts, no walks. He got a 2.60 ERA this year. Reds off to a good start in what looks like a very competitive, for now at least, NL Central. They're 9-6, but they're a game and a half out of first, with Milwaukee and Pittsburgh both doing well.
I'm not holding my breath. I mean, if okay. I hold my breath, I hold my breath, as sure as the world, Cincinnati will go on some kind of 7-game losing streak, and then they'll be at the bottom of the cellar before it's over. I don't know what to make of this Reds team. I mean, they're up and they're down. I mean, gosh, it's just, I could make a funny right there, but I'm not going to, not at the expense of Viagra and, you know, everything else, David Bell at Cincinnati and stuff. I mean, I just don't know what to say about Cincinnati. I don't know what to make. If Cincinnati stays quiet, just quietly goes about doing what they're doing right now and so forth, and then really turns it on by the time they get to, you know, last part of July, first part of August, and make their run, I think they're okay. But now, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to expect out of them. They hammered the White Sox in one game. What was it? 11-1, I think, was one of the games that they hammered them.
That's the one Abbott won. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was kind of surprised. I thought, well, the White Sox got to be better than that. But then, you know, the White Sox, like you said, they're reeling right now. And I'm just like, what? you know, what do you call Cincinnati? Just lukewarm. That's kind of what I refer to Cincinnati right now. And I'm like, I don't want to get my hopes up too much. I just really don't want to. I mean, you know, that's like telling me, saying that Pete Rose is going to go into the Hall of Fame. And you're going to tell me Pete Rose going to go into the Hall of Fame. They're going to let him in finally and stuff. And I'm going to say, yeah, but what are they going to throw out at him and stuff and say he was gambling at this time around? Or, you know, and they're running baseball gambling commercials now during baseball games and stuff. And it's like, you know, where's the common sense in this whole thing? So it's just, I don't know. It's but yeah, I'm kind of taking it easy right now about the Reds and so forth. So what about the Nats? Let me ask you that about the Nats and stuff. I kind of follow the Nats a little bit too. How
six are and they? Nine. The Nats are 6-9. It's a rebuilding year. I kind of expect it. You know, they got a lot of young guys still. It seems like to me they did well in the trades where they had to unload Max Scherzer and Trey Turner and Juan Soto. You know, I looked at that a couple of years ago when they first started making those moves, and most teams who trade away superstars don't get anything in return for those superstars. But the Nats got a starting shortstop, a really good starting catcher, a couple of good starting pitchers. They got some guys still in AA and AAA. They're expected to be contributors in the next year or two. So, you know, they might have done it. They might have done those trades right. But this year is not a year with any expectations. You know, just like the NL Central is pretty competitive, that NL East is pretty competitive too. You've got the Braves, you've got the Phillies, who are, you know, both loaded for bear. They're going to be good for the next 3 or 4 years at least. You got the Mets spending money like crazy, who aren't going to get much for that. And then you got the Marlins, who just stink. But that's a tough division with those with the Braves and the Phillies. And so, laying low. I mean, so you're tempering your expectations because, you know, you're waiting for the ball to drop. I'm just having fun. Whatever this Nats team does is whatever they do. Now, I did get up. Scott German and I, AFP colleague, our AFP colleague, Scott German and I went up to Baltimore this past weekend to take in a Brewers Orioles game and saw Jackson Holliday. He finally got his first career hit, the top prospect in all of minor league baseball, finally got his first hit yesterday. But the baseball teams up in the Northern Virginia, D.C., Maryland area, they're giving people good stuff to watch right now.
I think the Orioles, I'd like to see the Orioles do something. I know that they have been kind of lackluster. Did they make the playoffs here a couple of years ago or something?
They made last year. Yeah, they won the division last year.
They won the division last year. I'd like to see something out of them, but I mean, hey, the days of Earl Weaver are gone. I'm sorry. I just, you know, I have to sit sometimes when I'm really mad at the world or I'm upset at the world, I have to really sit down and go to YouTube sometimes and watch some old Earl Weaver films and watch how he cusses some of these umpires and how he throws things and how he does this. And then I learn new curse words from Bobby Cox and different people like that as time goes on. But, you know, there'll never be anybody else like Earl Weaver and things. I mean, Sparky Anderson was tame compared to Earl Weaver. I think we both know that. That's just
Earl was ahead of his time.
That's vintage.
And in addition to being very colorful with his language, he was ahead of his time before computers. He was, and before analytics, he had those index cards and those little index card holders with stats on everybody. So he could figure out who to bring in relief in the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings, who to pinch hit, who to platoon, and all that kind of stuff. Back in the 60s and 70s, he was doing that stuff, you know, a good 20, 30 years before the rest of baseball caught up. No, I'm not surprised he won as many games as he did as a manager.
Yeah, well, he just, not that I was a huge fan of him or anything. I just always liked it when he got wound up. And I always, even though I was never a big Braves fan, I liked it when Bobby Cox would get wound up about things. So,
well, Bobby Cox was thrown out of 162 games. That's a full major league season he missed by getting ejected.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. You don't see that anymore. We actually, Friday night when Scott and I were there for the O's Brewers game, there was what we would call a baseball brawl. When they all get out there and stand at each other, it's kind of like watching West Side Story. They're just dancing around on their two sides. No punches thrown. They're not even really slapping each other. But it gets people kind of riled up. The fans certainly got into it, even though the players didn't. But, It's not like the old days where you had guys sliding into second base, almost killing each other, and the manager's coming out and kicking dirt on the umps and picking up the bases and throwing them. Lou Piniella, think about him doing all that kind of stuff too. Don Zimmer. Yeah, it's not quite the same as it used to be in that respect.
And I'm always going to think of Don Zimmer, poor Don Zimmer, being headlocked and slung in a wrestling move, across the
when he
field
was
that
like 80
time.
years old, it seemed
Yeah,
like.
80 years old and stuff. And I'm like, I'm surprised the man even had a neck and body still attached after that fling. Who was it? Did that to him? He was
Pedro
pitcher.
Martinez.
Yeah, Martinez, Pedro Martinez. He did. And I mean, he reached, it was like a wrestling move. He grabbed him by the head and then slung him over and stuff.
Kind
And
of
then it was like,
bulldogged him down on the turf there.
wow.
That was a fight. That was actually a little bit of a, well, because there's the headlock there, and there was some pushing and shoving between, I think it was Jason Varitek, the Red Sox catcher, and Alex Rodriguez, who had taken offense to getting hit by a pitch. And Jason Varitek says to him, "We don't throw at 260 hitters." That's what got the benches to empty. That was actually a great Red Sox Yankees kind of moment, one of those iconic kind of things.
See, and then on the flip side of this, why is it that we enjoy watching these fights and these little skirmishes? It's like in racing too. Getting back to this, in racing, I'm of the firm belief, if you don't come out of a fight without any kind of blood running down your face, like Kyle Busch did that time in that one fight that he got in with Joey Logano, it's just worthless. And I mean, I've seen, gosh, this is a terrible way to say it. I've seen Jeff Gordon pansy fight Clint. Clint Boyer, get into it with him, throw some hard punches at Jeff Burton. I mean, this is just, racing's about the same way. When you start seeing a fight, I missed the fight the night that Rusty Wallace and Dale Earnhardt got into it at Bristol. I was in the media center at Bristol, and Rusty Wallace threw the water bottle and supposedly cracked Earnhardt right here in the nose. Hit him on the nose and stuff. And, Earnhardt was his typical self. He just, and it reminds me of the quote that I read just yesterday about from Buddy Baker, one of the greats in NASCAR. He said, Dale Earnhardt would give an aspirin a headache. And I
That's
loved it.
good.
I just loved the quote. I'm like, yeah, you're right. He would have. He was the kind of driver that would go and give aspirin a headache. And that's what he did. So.
I've been complaining for years on these podcasts, however long we've been doing them, NASCAR, and it seems like they're relaxing a little bit there. But for a while, NASCAR was too quick to bring guys into the trailer and tell them not to have those personal issues. Man, personal issues is what gets us watching.
Well, hey, look, Talladega may be that spark in the powder keg and everything. Who knows what's going to happen with some frustrated people this coming weekend and stuff. And if somebody goes and, Chastain may still be looking at William Byron at trying to get even with him about some things. And, Rick Hendrick has already made his statement about it before. He says, he's going to be settled down. Chastain will be settled down before it's over with. And he's been quiet for a while, but who's to say that it won't happen? I mean, it's like I said, we've got a powder keg going into Talladega this coming weekend. We may see a fight, we may not, but I mean, I'm telling you, when you've got teammates fighting each other like they did in the Xfinity series with Sheldon Creed and Austin Hill, and just blankety blank going at each other and just nobody's business, you've got something good. You've got some kind of a good product right there, and that kind of goes back to that same thing Andrew was talking about. I think I like the Xfinity race a lot better than I like the Cup race. I mean, it was fun, but not as good as seeing these guys bump and bang and then, throw stuff at each other and get mad with each other down in the pits and so forth. So,
They're
I
all
mean, it's
trying to get to
anybody's
the next
guess.
level. Those
Yeah, they're
guys in
trying to get to
Xfinity,
that next level.
they're trying to get a ride in the Cup Series. They're
Yeah.
going to be competitive that way. Hey, I'm trying to get more of the for our listeners out there. Rod and I talk for a while after the podcasts are over, and too much of that stuff is good stuff that doesn't end up on the podcast. So we got more of it on a podcast today. We did a
Yeah,
good
and we
job.
don't have to censor it either. Sometimes we're pretty clean with it too. I
That's
mean,
right. That's right. That's right. It's you.
another
It's you.
podcast that I do. Oh no. I mean, we'd have to censor it. I mean, it would be a straight beep all the way through with a lot of stuff with one guy that I do a podcast with, and it's just like, no, we're clean. We're family oriented here, except when we mention some things that kind of get to us and we've got to mention it and so forth. But yeah, this is, I enjoy it, you know, just doing this sort of thing, just talking kind of back and forth about things. And then also how they're related to racing too. A lot of cases.
Bringing it back. Hey, Talladega, 3 o'clock, follow the Facebook page. We'll have you updated with Rod, and then we'll get back next week. Rod, as always, thank you for your time and your insight.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thank you.